MMA Gambling Podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network is presented by MyBookie.ag. MyBookie Day Turkey Day Free Play is back this Thanksgiving. That's right, up to a $250 free bet on the Texans versus the Lions exclusively at MyBookie.ag. Make sure to use promo code SGP. We're also brought to you by Thrive Fantasy. Thrive Fantasy is a new daily fantasy sports app built specifically for player props. Download the app in the App Store and use promo code SGP for an instant deposit match of up to $50. That's ThriveFantasy.com, promo code SGP. Sign up and prop up today. We are also brought to you by Ace Per Head. Ace Per Head is the leader in pay-per-head providers, and they make it super easy to start your own sportsbook. Plus, Ace is offering up to 6 weeks free over at aceperhead.com/SGP. That's aceperhead.com/SGP.
Hello, degenerates and fight fans, and or both. Welcome back to the third episode of MMA Gambling Podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network. Yes, we're still here. We haven't been canceled, probably due to the low standards in the podcasting industry, but still. But we are back, nonetheless, so don't be shocked. My name is Jeff Fox. I am your host. I cover the UFC for Sports Gambling Podcast Network's website. I also am the head guy over at MMA-Manifesto.com. As per usual, I have a co-pilot with me here. He hosts two podcasts of his own, and somehow his wife let him do this one too. So now he has three podcasts. So he hosts the Top Turtle MMA podcast. He hosts the Prelim Picker podcast. He's my right-hand man over at MMA-Manifesto.com. He is a purple belt in Brazilian jiu-jitsu, but he's a black belt in the game of life. Daniel Gumby Vreeland.
Well, thank you for that intro. I'm not sure I'm a black belt at picking again after last week, which, again, seemed to be disastrous for me.
Yes, Dan, that's what I wanted to start with. Why do we suck at picking fights? It's our basic job here is to pick fights, and we're pretty bad at it.
I wouldn't say we suck at it. One of the problems, I think, with last week is, once again, another awful judges scorecard screwed us out of one fight. We both had Daniel Rodriguez beating Nicholas Dalby, which, by all accounts, he beat Nicholas Dalby. There's no reason to score that fight for Dalby. So, once again, there's one more fight that could have gone our way. But the other thing, too, was last weekend was just kind of like a chalk weekend. I think a lot of times me and you are the type that are looking for value in underdogs here. And if you look, other than Sasha Polatnikov in the opener of the night, and then a little bit later on, Caitlin Chookagian on the main card, I don't think we had an underdog win on the whole thing. You know, we liked Alex Perez, or I liked Alex Perez. You know, obviously he didn't get very much time to showcase his skills. We both like Brandon Royval. He gets his, you know, shoulder dislocated. You know, so like we're always looking for value in underdogs, and I think here, you know, the underdogs we were looking for just didn't come through. It was one of those very chalky cards, which is extremely hard to bet or find value in. So, you know, we hit a couple of the major favorites we liked. We both liked Tim Means over Mike Perry. So, you know, that's a nice one there, because obviously we didn't even know Mike Perry was about to miss weight by half a weight class. But nevertheless, I think we're going to get back on track here with the Blades versus Lewis fight card.
Yes, we better. So, yeah, we did, as Dan said, we did hit on one underdog, Tim Means. He was +110. That was basically the only dog we hit on the night. We both ended up 6-6, but Dan did a little worse than I did money-wise. If we were betting $100 on each fight, like a true degenerate gambler would, Dan would be down 240, I would be down 285. So, through two weeks of this, we're both 10-11. I would be down about $407. Dan would be down $362. So enough of that, though. Let's onward and upward with our picks this week. Let's break down what we saw, though, at UFC 255. As you alluded to, a very, very quick main event. Who would have guessed that Figueiredo would win by submission?
Yeah, and it bothers me too because you almost saw some of the flashes of what I liked as Alex Perez in an underdog. And you know, I was very vocal about being an Alex Perez believer in this fight. And I don't think the loss makes me believe in him less. Like, you know, he only got to throw six strikes. But in those six strikes, you know, I saw some of the things that I liked. I saw the leg kicks that I liked. I saw, you know, him being more of a voluminous striker than Figueiredo. He threw almost twice as many punches. He was shooting the takedowns like I kind of expected him to. He, you know, had a little bit of control time on the top. Now, granted, his head was stuck in a guillotine. But, like, he was following the game plan that I kind of expected from him. And it didn't look bad. And then just like, I think I underestimated Davidson Figueiredo, despite the fact that he is known as a power puncher, is also ridiculously good at jiu-jitsu.
Right, which makes the Figueiredo even more scary proposition at the in the flyweight division, and a more scary proposition for his next opponent, which sounds like is coming in a few weeks, Brandon Moreno. Not only does the guy kill you with his punches, almost literally, but he's got the jiu-jitsu to back it up.
Yeah, and that all seems like it should come together, both the accepting of the fight and those skills that you just mentioned. It should be making him a star, whether it does or not, because he's in the flyweight division, sort of remains to be seen. But, you know, I don't see any reason why taking two title fights in a month's time, knocking people dead and choking people out shouldn't make you an instant star. But, I mean, like, flyweight's always been a question mark, but hopefully it's less of a question mark now.
No doubt. Staying on the flyweight tip, but over on the women's side, no real surprise in the co-main event last week. Valentina Shevchenko, I guess it was a bit of a surprise. Valentina Shevchenko ended up winning 49-46, but Maya put up a far greater fight than you would have expected. And this is one of those, you could almost say one of those dud performances that Shevchenko puts up every once in a while. She's just as prone to do that as she is to pull off an explosive, exciting finish. It seems to be boom or bust with her.
Yeah, the weird thing for me is, so of course, obviously, everybody gave the second round to Jennifer Maya, which was kind of surprising that she was able to take down Shevchenko and hold her there. That was pretty wild. But also, yeah, like, you're right. It was kind of a dud performance out of her, and it was almost because I think she was so afraid that Maya was going to take her down again and hold her down that she just decided she was going to shoot that takedown. She decided she was going to control the fight like that and make Maya work off of her back, which was not a bad strategy for winning. I think she probably would have lit her up on the feet and maybe conceded another takedown or two along the way, but, like, ultimately won and maybe more dominantly on the feet. But I think she took the safer route. And I guess when you're the champ and you're fighting as often as she is, there's really nothing wrong with the safer route.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Won't gain you many new fans, but it will get you your win bonus and let you keep making championship money. So other than that, I'm trying to think what else was consequential. Caitlin Chookagian got a big win. Cynthia Calvillo decided she wanted to play a distance striking game with a woman far bigger than her for some reason. That didn't work out too well for her.
Yeah, that one was confusing. Almost as confusing as Jordan Wright just going in blindly and deciding that he is a better puncher than Joey Keane Buckley, which it's just not fundamentally not true.
Right. Right. Well, but Buckley's star continues to rise too, also. And then we start things off with the fight of the night. Koski and Pelednikov. That was quite a battle.
Yeah, I loved that fight, and it was interesting too because I think me and you both picked Koski by early stoppage, and I think too we weren't that far away from being right on that one too, as long as we're tooting our horn again here, because Koski was like two punches, maybe just being a little bit better placed in that ground and pound, or even just like maybe not pouring it on away from winning that fight. And instead, he like absolutely dumped out the tank and learned like a very important prospect lesson there that like the guys in the UFC are way tougher than the dudes you've been beating on the regional circuit.
Yes, without a doubt. But both hopefully bright futures for both those guys, because they really kicked off the night in style.
Yeah, I think there are bright futures for them both too. And we talked a little bit last week too about Pelednikov and his background too, because I think he's a fun striker and we're going to see a lot more of him.
No doubt. But let's move on, since that was a bit of a disaster financially for us last week. Let's move on to this week's big show. But before that, let's tell you about mybookie.ag. Thanksgiving is all about traditions like turducken with mashed potatoes and betting on football with MyBookie's Turkey Day Free Play. MyBookie's third annual Turkey Day Free Play returns Thanksgiving Thursday, which I guess would be this week for you Yankees. Us Canadians had it last month where it's supposed to be in October, but nonetheless, it's your chance to bet up to $250 risk-free on the early Thursday game. The Turkey Day Free Play is a no-risk, all-gravy wager on the full game spread. Pick the right team and you win. If your team is upset, your bet up to $250 is refunded before the next afternoon game. New players will get their first deposit matched halfway up to $1,000 to help add even more excitement to the greatest football weekend of the year. That's right. Make your first deposit and get extra cash you can use on parlays, teasers, props all weekend long. Use promo code SGP in order to claim your bonus and your free bet. And the best part is, that's only the beginning. MyBookie has promotions all holiday weekend long. Turkey Day Free Plays Thanksgiving Thursday. That rolls into Black Friday boosted odds and finishes the holiday strong with buy one, get one free Cyber Monday night football. That's why at MyBookie they call football season winning season. Check it out now. No risk, all gravy, baby. Don't forget to use the promo code SGP to claim your freebies. Okay, maybe Thanksgiving for the Americans, but UFC does not never sleeps. They have another fight card coming up this weekend from their UFC Apex in Las Vegas. It's headlined by two heavyweights, Curtis Blaydes and Derek Lewis, which should be fun. Let's start things off as we do with the curtain jerker, which we'll go with a fight with, which basically was just added to the card. Not sure if it's going to end up being the actual opener, but we'll go with that that premise at this point. So it's a featherweight battle between Kai Kamaka III, aka Kai Kamaka Jr., I guess that would make him. And he's fighting Jonathan Pierce. Kamaka Jr. is 3 years younger. He's got the striking and grappling stats in his favor, but both guys have very limited experience in the UFC. So take these stats with a grain of salt. Kamaka won his UFC opener. He's 8-2 overall. He's won 6 straight fights, but he is taking this on short notice, which is usually a red flag when you're betting those short notice fights. This year I've won about a third of the time, so it's the odds are stacked against him in that realm. So he's fighting Jonathan Pierce, who will be much bigger than him, 5 inches taller, 2 inches of reach. He dropped his UFC opener. He got knocked out actually last year. It was just over a year at this point, to Joe Lozon. He's 9-4 overall. This fight, as we're recording, was basically just announced, so we don't have any lines on it anywhere. I'm trying to think who I was leaning towards. I think I'm leaning towards Pierce based on his, well, he's got a huge size advantage. Plus, if you go over resumes of the two, he's fought a far higher level of competition. But I'm not sold on it. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see where this one's lined, because I think if it was full training camp versus full training camp, everybody had time, I actually think Kai Kamaka comes in here somewhere around -135, 140 as a favorite, and Pierce being, you know, like a +120 underdog. Being that it's short notice, we're probably going to see damn near close to even odds. So I bet this winds up being a pick 'em. Obviously, when the odds eventually do come out, if you guys see a plus number, a big plus number next to each of these names, it probably doesn't belong there, and that's probably the right place to bet. But if I'm picking them here at a pick 'em, I'm going to go with Kai Kamaka, despite the fact that he's at a huge reach disadvantage. As we saw in that fight with Tony Kelly, he just pushes forward. He throws tons of bombs. He gets into range. And Jonathan Pierce, while I really like his grappling game, he's kind of rudimentary on the feet. I don't really have a lot of faith in what he's doing striking-wise. And that's despite the fact that he has a knockout win on Contender Series, and he's, you know, stopped people due to strikes before. A lot of that stuff winds up being on the mat. And so here, I think probably Kai Kamaka just gets on the inside, strikes him up a little bit, beats him up a little bit. And heck, I wouldn't even be surprised to see Kamaka land a takedown or two and just survive on the top and win rounds that way. So yeah, I'm going to go with Kai Kamaka if this is close to being a pick 'em. I like that as betting odds. But if, like I said, either of these guys gets posted near plus 200, I think there's clear value on either of them as large underdogs.
All right, so there you go. I've got Pierce, Dan's got Kamaka. We're sending you mixed messages, which is always good when you're gambling. Next up, we will go two guys that are fairly new to the UFC. This will be, I believe, both their third fights in the big show. Featherweights again, Spike Carlisle, Bill Algeo. Should be a fun one. Carlisle, got 4 inches of height on Algeo. The reach is, Algeo's got 2 inches of reach on him, though, which is, so he's got the longer arms, but Carlisle's got the height. Carlisle's 4 years younger than him. Grappling stats are in his favor. Striking stats are even for these guys. He is 1-1 in his UFC career so far. Algeo is still looking for his first victory. He's dropped his first two UFC fights. Algeo is a plus 130 dog at this point. Carlisle minus 160. I am going with the chalk. Your thoughts?
I'm going to take the underdog here. We're going to differ on the first two both. Yeah, I'm going to take Senor Perfecto here, the Algeo. And the reason's really simple for me. He won me over when he fought Ricardo Lamas. You know, like we're talking, you're right. He's, if you're counting his contenders here, he's 0-2 with a loss to Brendan Lorraine, who was supposed to, I mean, he should have gotten a contract off of that performance against Bill Algeo. And then we see him fight Ricardo Lamas on short notice. And the dude went to war with Ricardo Lamas on short notice. He absolutely put together a fun-ass performance where, yeah, Lamas won. But, dude, Lamas has been in there with everybody. Like, literally everybody in the featherweight division. He's fought Calvin Kattar, Darren Elkins, Josh Emmett. He fought Charles Oliveira, Max Holloway, you know, Chad Mendez. Like, Jose Aldo, he's fought everybody. And Bill Algeo went toe-to-toe with him for 15 minutes slugging. And when we look at how this fight's going to go, too, you know, Algeo is fighting here against Spike Carlisle, a guy who likes to just throw bombs. I just can't imagine if Ricardo Lamas threw bombs nonstop for 15 minutes, that Spike Carlisle is instead going to get him out of there. And with that being said, Spike Carlisle is a guy who kind of needs to get you out of there to win. He's a knockout guy. So I like Algeo to probably survive here and win the later rounds.
Okay, well, at least one of us will get this one right. We both won't both eat an L, which is what we've been doing the past couple weeks. So that's good. One of us will win. So bring this to another lot of the smaller weight classes to start things off. This one's going to be a catch weight. Do you know what weight the Sanders Manis fight is going to be at, Dan? Have you heard?
Last I heard, I think it's coming in at 140. Just because both guys can't make their usual bantamweight kind of on short notice. Right. Last I heard, 140 catch weight, but I'm not positive about that.
Okay, so we got veteran and former Mr. Becky Lynch for those WWE fans out there. Cool Hand Luke Sanders. He has the striking stats over his opponent, Nathan Manis. He's won two out of his last three. He's been around forever. This fight's basically a pick-em for both these guys. They're both at minus 115. Manis has got a huge size advantage on him. He's 4 inches of height, 5 inches of reach, 6 years younger, grappling stats in his favor, but it is very small sample size. He's only 1-0 in the UFC. 12-1 overall. Like I said, this fight is a pick-em. I'm going with the younger, bigger man in Manis.
Yeah, I'm going to take Manis here, too. We're going to finally agree on that.
There we go.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of reasons to like him. You mentioned that length that he has. He's clearly got some height and reach advantage. And I think, too, his style plays well into that because he moves forward. And Luke Sanders, if you look back at his fights, when he's not moving forward, he actually looks pretty bad. You know, you can go back to his fight with Andre Sukumta, where he got backed up a bunch of times and eventually got knocked out by Sukumta. And you could say the same thing. Like, he didn't look good moving backwards against Henan Barrow sometimes. And if you're not looking good against Henan Barrow in 2019, you've got some issues. So, yeah, I like Nate Manis as the guy who's both bigger, younger, has been more active. And actually, I think he's probably got a wrestling advantage here, too. So, yeah, I think Manis is the play here. And probably if you're looking for a prop, too, Manis by decision is probably not a bad play.
Right, yeah, that's a very good play, and it's you got to like this line, pick'em line. If Dan and I are both going with Manis in this one, and you can as of this recording, you can get him at like I said, a pick'em minus 115. So can't lose on that. Before we finish up the prelims, let's tell you about Thrive Fantasy. Come prop up on Thrive Fantasy this season. Thrive Fantasy is a daily fantasy sports app for player props. With Thrive, you can eliminate the countless hours of research and focus on only the top-tier athletes that have the biggest impact on the game. If you want to play NFL, you choose 10 out of 20 available player props to build your lineup. If you want to play NBA, PGA, baseball, esports, whatever is in season, choose 5 out of the 10 available player props to build your lineup. Each prop is assigned a fantasy value for both the over and the under based on how likely it is to hit. Hit the most props and rack up the most points to win a share of the prize pool. Thrive has over $50,000 in guaranteed prizes weekly. Why am I doing a podcast when I can just play that? I should. And has awarded over $1.6 million in cash prizes. So make sure you use the promo code SGP when you sign up today, and you'll receive an instant match of up to $50 in your first deposit with a 4x rollover. So download Thrive Fantasy on the App Store or Play Store, or by visiting their website, thrivefantasy.com. Sign up and prop up today, and don't forget our promo code SGP. All right, let's move in right along with this week's fight card. More little guys, which is fine by me, and I know it's fine by Dan. We got a couple flyweight fights coming up. Sumedhor, I'm butchering his name. Say his name, Dan.
Sumedhorji.
Right. We're in a sad state of affairs when I'm counting on Dan to pronounce names correctly for me. But yes, Sumedhorji versus Malcolm Gordon. Like I said, it's a flyweight battle. Mederji, slight size advantage, inch of height, inch of reach, so basically not much to worry about there, but he is 6 years younger, which is a key to winning fights, especially when it's a gap that big. He also has striking and grappling stats in his favor, but once again, this is another small sample size. Most of the guys, other than basically Sanders, most of the guys on the undercard here are up and coming guys, which is always fun. He is 1-1 in the UFC. He's fighting Gordon, who dropped his UFC debut. Mederji is a huge -345 favorite to Gordon's +270. You going with the chalk here, Dan?
Yeah, I'm gonna go with the chalk here. I am there is a hesitation on gambling on a number that large. First of all, for me, ever. But also in this one, I'm a little alarmed because, first of all, Mederji is coming down in weight class. He's been at bantamweight for his first two UFC fights, the one against Andrei Sukumta and Luis Smolka, who are good level competition at bantamweight. But you got to wonder how the weight cut's going to deal with him. He did fight at flyweight before he made it to the UFC, but, you know, you got to question that a little bit. And in addition to that, too, you know, like, one of the things that's really great about Malcolm Gordon, and I am a Malcolm Gordon fan, too, is he's got some really good grappling. So if Mederji comes down in weight class, loses a little bit of that strength advantage because he's zapped from a weight cut, Gordon might be able to get him down. But I actually think Mederji is a clear-cut pick to win here because, you know, he's going to be the stronger of the two as long as he doesn't gas out and make himself weak with that weight cut. He fights really well from a distance. As we saw against Sukumta, he stuffs takedowns really well. So, like, as long as he stays at range, which he again, that's another thing he does really well because of his kicks. As long as he fights at range here, Malcolm Gordon has no chance of taking him down. And I also think Malcolm Gordon's got almost no chance of winning this on the feet.
Right, I'm taking the favor too, but like you said, that number that high, you may want to avoid, especially with newer guys where we really haven't had a chance to see exactly what each guy brings to the big show. Another flyweight belt coming up. As Dan said earlier, we have guys dropping down to flyweight now, which is interesting. When I was doing the flyweight rankings for on my website, MMA-Manifesto, I do performance rankings for all the weight classes based on how guys actually do in fights, guys and gals, and who they beat, that type of thing. There are quite a few guys dropping down to flyweight, which is nice. Bantamweight's a pretty high quantity weight class, so flyweight could use some more fresh meat for their dominant champs. So sidebar there. Flyweights, we have Amir Albazi versus Double Z, Zalgiris Zhumagulov.
Nailed it.
there we go. Yeah, after stumbling over it, I got my way through it there. So Albazi is, he's got an inch of height, 2 inches of reach, so slight size there. 5 years younger. grappling stats in his favor, but like I said before, disclaimer there, for because he's only fought once in the UFC. He's, like I said, he won his first UFC fight, and Double Z, we'll call him, just to make it easier. Won't take a chance butchering his name a second time. He's dropped his UFC debut. These guys are a pick 'em at this point. I'm gonna take all Ballsy, just due to size and the youth being on his side. Plus, I believe he'll be the superior grappler. What are your thoughts?
I actually like Zalgas's grappling all a little bit better. I like the way that, you know, Zalgas, he did get stuffed a lot on his takedowns in his debut. He went 2 of 11, but it's against Rolland Paiva, who's very tall, fights very long, and fights really well long. Albazi is not a particularly long fighter in the way that he fights. He likes to get on the inside. He shot some takedowns in his last fight against the aforementioned Malcolm Gordon and got on the, you know, in there. And I just think Zalgas, if you go back to his regional record too, is so much more impressive. His last three wins before he got to the UFC were all over UFC guys. He beat Tyson Nam, he beat Tagir Ulambakov, and he beat Ali Bagotinov, who was a guy who fought for the title previously. So he beat all those guys by decision, and most of them by, like, just getting on the inside, throwing punches in bunches, and not being afraid to wrestle a little bit. And I think he could probably do that against Albazi here too. But again, this is a razor close fight and a really tough one to call.
Yep, that's but very good insight on him. That's why Dan's on the show, guys. It's not just because of his sexy voice. He actually knows things about these fighters and what they've done before they come into the UFC octagon. So we differed on the other one, which is good. Maybe we'll actually get some separation this week between us and prove who is the brains of the operation. So another bantamweight fight. Like I said, it's all the little fellas this weekend. We've got Martin Day versus Anderson Dos Santos, which is basically a mashup of every Brazilian fighter's name right there, Anderson Dos Santos. So Martin Day, much bigger guy, 5 inches of height, 3 inches of reach, 3 years younger. Striking stats are in his favor in his three fight UFC career, but he is 0-3. He's dropped all three of his fights. Dos Santos dropped both of his UFC fights. So these guys, this is basically an old fashioned wrestling loser leaves town match. Basically, the loser more than likely is gonna get his walking papers here. Dos Santos is a +155 dog. Day -185 favorite. I'm going with the favorite once again. I know it's boring, but I think he wins this one.
Yeah, and this one's so hard for me to pick too. I've been back and forth a couple of times on this one. The thing is that Martin Day has got like dynamite in his hands. The guy throws big bombs. We saw him throwing them against Davy Grant until, you know, awkwardly Davy Grant of all people knocked him out. Anderson Dos Santos is a guy who gets hit a lot, so I think for that reason I'm leaning with Day here too. But, like, Anderson Dos Santos is also the type of guy who's going to get in your face and not be afraid of what you're doing. So with that being said, you know, like, I wouldn't be totally surprised if Dos Santos ekes out a decision here. Being that plus money is not too bad on him, if you do like Dos Santos, don't be afraid to pull the trigger, because I think this one's actually a lot closer than the odds. But ultimately, I'm going to take Martin Day here.
All right. So we both agree on that one. And we finish off our prelims with another bantamweight fight, but this one is on the female side of things. Rebel Girl Ashley Evans Smith against Norma Dumont Vienna, the battle of the three women with three names. Ashley Evans Smith, 4 inches height. Let me look at the right person here. Here she is. She has the striking stats in her favor, but she's only won one of her last four fights. She's 1-3. Dumont's 3 years younger. Grappling stats in her favor, but she's only fought once in the UFC, which was a loss, which actually was her only loss in pro MMA. She's only 4-1 at this point. Very inexperienced. She's -120 to Smith's -110. Who you take, American or the Brazilian here, Dan?
I think I'm going to go with the Brazilian. This one's really, really freaking hard to call too. I know I keep saying that about these prelims, but this is a really hard prelim card. Ashley Evans Smith has only fought once in the last 2 years, and it was in February of 2019. How do you get a read on somebody who you haven't seen in almost, you know, 20 months or 21 months at this time? And that was a kind of an ugly decision loss to Andrea Lee. But before that, her last fight was April of 2018. So like she hasn't fought or she hasn't won in almost 3 full years. But she's fighting somebody, and this is what gives me even more pause to pick up. She's fighting somebody coming down from featherweight as she comes up from flyweight. You know, they're going to meet in the middle at bantamweight here. Ashley Evans Smith is kind of a woman who's always used her wrestling and her strength in her advantage in order to win fights, right? Like, she out-muscled Beck Rawlings en route to a decision. So, like, if that's your style and you're going to fight somebody who just fought, not only just fought Megan Anderson at featherweight, but took Megan Anderson down at featherweight, right? Like, she's a very physically strong woman. I'm not sure what this looks like on the feet because I don't love either of their striking, but I think I'm just going to go with Dumont because she stuffs enough takedowns and probably tires out Ashley Evans Smith, who's trying to come up and fight a much larger woman.
Hear that? Americans, Dan is a traitor to your country. He picked a Brazilian. I will be nice to my neighbors to the south. I'll take Smith, but all your points are good, and there's no shame in having your only loss as a pro to Megan Anderson. So, but like I said, this is another one that, as the odds are alluding to through these prelims, this is another, at least on paper, it should be another close fight. That wraps up the prelim portion, which will be on ESPN Plus on Saturday. Let's tell you about Ace Perhead before we hop into the main card. Have you ever thought of starting your own sports book but don't know how? Ace Perhead is here to help you start your own sports book. They'll provide you with an all-inclusive professional betting site with all the lines updated up to the second and wagers graded immediately. They have top-notch customer support going 24/7 and some of the sharpest lines in the industry. So plus, Ace Perhead offers live betting and an amazing mobile experience. Get started today, and Ace is offering up to 6 weeks free. So go to aceperhead.com/sgp. aceperhead.com/SGP. Okay, off to the main card. This guy has fallen from grace from headlining pay-per-views not too long ago to opening up the main card here. Anthony Lionheart Smith. He's in a like I said, he's in a bit of a slump here. He will be going up against Devin Clark in a light heavyweight opener on the main card, which will be on ESPN Plus as well as ESPN2. So Smith, it will be the bigger guy, at least lengthwise, 4 inches high, inch of reach. But like I said before, he's in a bit of a slump. He's lost two straight, 2-3 over his last five. Clark will be the younger man, 2 years younger. He's got striking and grappling stats in his favor, as well as the, momentum here. He's won two straight, three of his last five. This is another razor close fight, at least on the boards. It's a pick 'em at -115. I'll be going with the younger man in Clark. Your thoughts?
I'm gonna take Clark too, and I can't believe it. I mean, if you told me 2 years ago that I was gonna take Devin Clark in a fight over Anthony Smith, who was fighting for a title at the time, I'd laugh at you. But like, there's so many alarming factors to the way that Anthony Smith has looked in those losses. And the biggest one for me being Glover Teixeira took him down at will. Glover Teixeira took him down and dominated him on top. And not that Glover Teixeira isn't a phenomenal grappler. We just saw him do it to Thiago Santos as well. But that's Devin Clark, right? Like, Devin Clark is a guy who is a collegiate wrestler. Devin Clark is a guy who likes to wrestle it up a little bit. And if you look at the guys who've beaten him when he does try to wrestle him up, they snatch up chokes, right? Like, Jan Blankovic got him with a standing rear naked choke and really weird, awkward grappling exchange. You know, Ryan Spann guillotined him when he shot a sloppy takedown. I don't know about you, but I've got literally no hope that Anthony Smith finds a way to submit Devin Clark, right? Like, he submitted Alexander Gustafsson, and I guess maybe we should give him some props for that. But, you know, I actually like Devin Clark here to just take him down enough times that he controls the fight and wins a decision. And once again, we'll talk a little bit about props towards the end, but Devin Clark by decision is a prop that you're going to want to look out for when that line posts, because he's not a finisher. He's not a guy who's gone in and finished a bunch of people. Anthony Smith being as tough as hell, as you know, obviously you saw by him getting his teeth knocked out the last fight and just keep going. I'd take Devin Clark here by decision.
Yeah, that's very, yeah. When you look at Clark's record, it's all decisions. Basically, at least recently, it's all decisions, and not, not to slander Smith too much, because he is a nice guy, and he's a very very good story, his rise in the sport. But he's basically has always been a journeyman fighter. He got in a hot streak in a shallow division, which propelled him to the top. And basically, he seems to be regressing back to the mean here, to be basically a middle of the pack type fighter.
Yeah, and it's kind of a sad fall from grace too, but it's also just really tough matchmaking on him too, right? Like, yeah, you lose to John Jones. John Jones is a beast. Then they give you a guy who's pretty, you know, has gaps in his grappling in Gustafson, and they're like, oh yeah, he's back on track. And then back to back dudes who just are not gonna deal with you in the striking department. Teixeira, who can just brutalize you, and Rakic, I guess, did strike with him a little bit, but Rakic is a guy who's shown he's willing to mix in the takedowns to keep you off balance. So, you know, bad matchmaking two in a row for him there, and, you know, three out of four, and now he's getting another guy who, I mean, he trains with John Jones. He knows the style that it takes to beat Anthony Smith, and actually, I think he's probably a worse stylistic matchup, while not being a, you know, better fighter than John Jones. He's a worse stylistic matchup for Anthony Smith.
Right. Right, exactly. So a little depressing, but we'll move on. This fight, actually, the next fight we're going to talk about will not be depressing. This should be possibly up there for fight of the night. It should be a fun one. Welterweights, Miguel Baeza versus Takashi Sato. Baeza's will be the bigger man, 4 inches of height, slight reach, one-inch reach advantage. 2 years younger, he's a perfect 9-0 in MMA, 3-0 in the UFC. He's also got the ever-important striking stats in his favor, which basically I believe we're at 72% of fighters who have the striking stat advantage going into a fight win this year. So that's a pretty big big card to have in your hand there. But Sato is no slouch himself. 2-1 in the UFC. Of his 16 wins, 11 are knockouts. So this should be a fun fight. Like I said, he is a +155 dog. Baeza is -190 favorite. I'm going with a favorite again. I'm not going with a lot of dogs this week. Not intentionally, but that's just the way things have lined up.
Yeah, I'm going chalk on this one too. And I think it's just because, I mean, like, if you look at the people Saito has beat, I mean, he knocked out Ben Saunders, which, sure, give him some credit for knocking out a veteran like that. But Ben Saunders is not the same Ben Saunders we grew up watching and we grew up loving. He's a show of himself, or at least was by the time Saito got to him. And then he beat Jason Witt, who again, I'm not real sold on Jason Witt, and he did that in just 48 seconds. You know, throwing a loss to Bilal Muhammad in there. Whereas Miguel Baez is out there beating guys, you know, like, you know, he beat Victor Reyna on the Contender Series, who's a really tough out. He beat Hector Aldana. He really knocked out Matt Brown, which is, you know, again, people who are a shell of themselves. Matt Brown is not necessarily a shell of Matt Brown yet. Matt Brown is still the same tough as hell Matt Brown. He just came off of beating Ben Saunders too and Diego Sanchez. So, yeah, I like Miguel Baeza here. I think he's quicker on the feet. In Saito, to me, definitely got that one-touch knockout power. I just don't see him landing on Baeza.
Which brings us to the only other female fight in the card. This will be in the women's flyweight division, Gina Mazzani versus Rachel Ostovich. Mazzani will be the bigger fighter. She's fought at higher weight classes, I believe, in the past. She's 3 inches taller, 6 inches of reach, striking advantage in her favor. She's dropped three straight, though, and only one win out of her last five fights. Ostovich, 3 years younger, grappling stats in her favor, but she has lost her last two fights via sub, so it's not that she's a superb grappler. Just Mazzani's more of a striker, kickboxer type fighter. So Ostovich has only won once in the UFC in her three fights. So she's coming in at +120 dog. Mazzani's -140. Once again, boring Jeff going with the favorite in this one.
Yeah, I'm gonna take Mazzani in this one, and the reason I like Mazzani in this one too is, first of all, she's moving down weight class. I think that's the right move for her. I think she was always a little undersized for 135. And if you look at, you know, her losses at 135, they're to very big women, right? Like, she lost at 135 to Sarah McMahon. She lost to Macy Chason. She lost to Julia Avila. These are big 135ers. And even Lena Landsberg's a big 135er. You know, like, so she was always kind of undersized. She's going to go down a weight class to somebody who's been bullied at 125. I think she has the same ability to do that to Rachel Ostovich. And also, we're talking about Ostovich. She ain't fought in 2 years either. She last lost to Paige VanZant in January of 2019. It was the first ever fight card on ESPN. So it's been a while since she's been in the UFC. I've never been sold on Rachel Ostovich, and I think Gina Mazzani probably has despite the stats, probably has a grappling advantage in this one that I can see her exploiting.
Yeah, minus 140 is actually looking pretty good for her at this point, too. Yeah, which brings us, looks like the night is going to finish off with two heavyweight fights, which no one will complain about. We had had another fight lined up for the co-main event, lightweight fight, but Renato Moicano got that dreaded COVID-19, so his fight with Rafael Fiziev has been kicked down the street a little bit. They hope to match up later on this year. So as of this point, not sure if it's going to stay this way because these are rather newbies to be co-headlining, but we've got two heavyweights currently penciled into the co-headlining slot, Josh Parisian and the superhero himself, Parker Porter, the new Spider-Man. Parisian, he's got 4 inches of height and reach over his smaller opponent. He's also 4 years younger. He's won both his UFC fights, striking stats in his favor. Porter dropped his UFC debut. Porter, plus 170 dog, Parisian minus 200. You know, I'm going to take the favorite once again. I'm not going for any plus money this week, it looks like.
Well, I think you're smart on this one then, because Parisian is by far the better fighter here. And I love Parker Porter. He's actually got a great story of, you're talking about a journeyman earlier. This is a guy who made his pro debut all the way back in 2007. I was just finishing up high school when this dude made his debut. And he shortly thereafter fought John Jones on the regional circuit when he was just 2-0. So the guy has been fighting for a long time, and I'm glad to see him in the UFC. But Parisian, like you said, younger guy, more polished. He's got some reach. And when you look at Porter, probably the biggest limitation for him as a heavyweight is he is only 6 foot tall and has only 75-inch reach. That's kind of small for the 265-pound division. And as we saw with Parisian, you know, he uses that length pretty well for a guy of his size, like we saw in the Contender Series just, you know, a couple months ago. So, yeah, I like Parisian here. I think he gets the job done and probably finishes Porter as well.
There we go. So that will make it 3-0 for Parisian. We may have some fresh meat in the heavyweight division, which is always needed. Which brings us to our heavyweight main event. Curtis Blaydes, Razor Blaydes versus Derek Lewis. Blaydes, 1 inch reach, 6 years younger, striking. I don't know what striking is, but he's got striking stats and grappling stats are in his favor. These guys are both veterans, so these stats actually probably mean something at this point. He's won 4 straight fights of his 14 pro wins, 10 are via knockout. Most of them via the ground and pound variety. He's only lost twice in his 16 fight pro career, and they were both to Francis Ngannou. So no shame in that game. Lewis dropped 3 straight, 19 KOs of his 24 wins. He used to be a super fun guy to watch fight, but he seems to be fighting more like a actual trained fighter now, rather than just a guy who doesn't want to be there or hunches over in pain or has to go to the washroom in the middle of the fight or runs out of breath, but then ends up knocking out the guy with a haymaker. Still a fun guy, but he seems to be more of a traditional fighter at this point, which doesn't seem to be working for him quite as well. 3 straight losses. So he's a quite sizable dog here, plus 255 to Blaydes, minus 315. I'm playing it safe again here with the favorite.
Yeah, I think we go with Blaydes here because despite the fact, you know, that, like you said, Lewis is looking a little bit more like a regular fighter, he's given up a lot of takedowns. You know, if you give up 3 takedowns to Blagoy Ivanov, like, what hope in the whole world do you have against Curtis Blaydes? Because that dude is a freaking machine. I mean, we saw Curtis Blaydes in his UFC debut take down Francis Ngannou a bunch of times. And, like, I mean, like, a fight he probably could have won if that doesn't get stopped but because of the doctor. You know, he's a good fighter. He's got an amazing takedown game. I just don't see any way that Derek Lewis survives long enough to land one of his miracle last round knockouts. So yeah, Curtis Blaydes here. And actually, if there's a prop in there of him knocking him out early, you know, I might even go first round in this one, because Blaydes just pours it on, and it's not like Lewis is super durable when somebody's on top of him raining down punches either.
No, so that's, we basically both see it going the same way. He's Blaydes will take him down and basically batter him until the fight ends.
Yeah, and I think too that, like, you know, people laud the durability of Derek Lewis too, but like, also just think about the sheer volume of Curtis Blaydes when he hits the mat. And also, like, it's not like he's just throwing like empty punches where he's just trying to, like, you know, rack up a total like some guys do on the ground. And not to take away from, again, Blagoy Ivanov, but like, that's kind of what Blagoy Ivanov does when it hits the mat. He just kind of spams shots in there. Curtis Blaydes is a dude who knocked out Alistair Overeem from guard. Like, the dude drops haymakers when he hits the ground, and they're precise as hell. So, yeah, I think he's going to finish him, and I think he's going to finish him early.
There you go. So, with all the favorites that I've picked so far, we're going to need some props or some parlays here to give people some plus money. You have some in mind. It sounds like you've been hinting at some throughout the show here, so lay it on us.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, first of all, if you're looking for a parlay, start with Miguel Baeza. Build something with him, because I really love Miguel Baeza on this fight card, coming in at that number. And also, too, we talked about Josh Parisian coming at a negative 210. He's just longer, better, smarter. We're going to see him in a good place, too. So you pair those two together, you're going to get a little bit better than even money. And I think both of them are pretty surefire things. I also wouldn't hate just tacking on Curtis Blaydes into every parlay that you put on the night, because I think he's a sure thing in the main event. And even at negative 330, just the boost to all of your parlays is not a bad move. I talked before, too, quickly about two decision props I like. I like Devin Clark and Nate Maness both. If you're going to bet on them, I say bet on him by decision, because I don't think Maness is going to sub Luke Sanders. I don't think he's going to knock out Luke Sanders. And same with Devin Clark. I don't think he's going to get Anthony Smith out of there, because he has so many wins by decision. And Anthony Smith is pretty damn tough. So I like Maness and Clark both by decision as props. And for a parlay, I like Baeza paired with Parisian. But also, just think about throwing Blaydes into everything you do.
Right, exactly. So there you go. Some plus money for you there, or closer. Yeah, with those parlays, you would be getting into the plus range, which brings us to the end of another week. We made it through another show. If we don't get canned, we will be back for another show next week, where I can tell you where Dan went wrong with all his picks, and I'm actually gonna have a good week this week. I can just tell. In the meantime, Twitter, please. No, this is a basically the one thing I'm asking of the listeners this week. Please make sure you follow me on Twitter. At this point, Dan's got three times the followers I have, and that's destroying my ego. That can't be the case. So follow Jeff Fox, writer. And if you're following Gumby Vreeland at this point, please unfollow him. We got to get those numbers more evenly matched. Like I said, my ego can't handle this any longer.
Well, if you're gonna win the I might as well win the Twitter account.
Well, we'll see. Well, we'll see where we stand next week. But thank you everyone for listening. Like I said, we'll be back next week to tell you how we messed up all our picks and we lost you all your money. So in the meantime, Americans, have a good Thanksgiving. Don't go and be super spreaders, please. I want our border to open at some point so we can go back down to the States to visit you. So have a lovely week, and we will see you next time.